手工做。
Hey, have you on?
You have me on? It's okay. I'm going to put myself on. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. I have two things to say before the show begins. Two things to say before the year begins. Number one, I was reminded of a story. They tell the following story about Rav Gifter, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Tells in Cleveland. And in the early 50s, it was on the east side, and went into a Sfarim store. He was looking for a sefer called Ketzot HaChoshen. Ketzot HaChoshen is the handbook of yeshivas. It's like one of the sfarim that is learned, and very powerful, powerful sefer. Anyway, the fellow in the store said, "You know, I'm going to look. I may have one copy." And he looked and he looked. And yes, there was one old copy available of the Ketzot HaChoshen. And he sold it to Rav Gifter. And he told Rav Gifter, this is most probably the last Ketzot HaChoshen that will ever be sold in America. It was it. The yeshiva world, everything was dying. Fast forward 60 years later, the amount of printing and publishing of Torah volumes is awesome. That fellow in the store would never have never believed it. The Ketzot HaChoshen has been printed in hundreds of thousands of copies. It's been edited and reprinted, and svarim have been written about it. It's unbelievable. You take a look at the svarim scene in the Torah world, and you can see, wow, alive and well. What caused me to think about this story? Malka gave me last week a sefer that was written by her enkel, Dibros Mordechai. His name is Mordechai. Mordechai Dov Shapiro. And I had a very good time all week looking into the sefer. It deals with a halacha, one area of halacha, the halacha dealing with the bracha of halamichya. Yeah, tremendous. I'm telling you, it's a good sefer. It's a good sefer. But maybe more than it being a good sefer, is it's just another proof positive that we ain't going nowhere except upward. And I want to thank Malka for having given me the say. That's number one. Number two, I didn't know. Oh yeah, he's there. He knew. He knew, and you know, in the wee hours of this morning, I knew exactly I'm going to have to say it. Ira strikes again. And it's very fascinating. He has a letter in the Jerusalem Post this morning. I'm wondering what brought him to think about that. He begins talking about Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, writes that West Bank settlements are, quote, devouring Palestinian farms and homes in the West Bank in ways that are ugly, brutal, selfish, and deceitful. Did we hear those words last week? Yeah, we certainly did. Anyway, well, perhaps Friedman's words could be described in such a manner. What was that? Yeah. Oh, most probably what you mean is we're learning Pshat in Agri now. That Friedman's words are ugly, brutal. Is that what I meant? You know? Yeah, that's what you meant? But the settlements should be described as model communities in cities built on barren land. It's bizarre, ludicrous, And magnanimous, don't use such big words. I can't. And magnanimous, to a fault, to suggest that in Israel, from the Mediterranean to the Jordan, is too large, about the distance between southern Brooklyn and midtown Manhattan, if that, while the American distance of 3,000 miles between the coasts and territory in Alaska near Russia and Hawaii and Guam well into the Pacific, encompassing many time zones, isn't. The land of Israel, according to the Torah, was given by God to the Jewish people 4,000 years ago, who have had continued their historic and legitimate claims to the land through settlements since then. It was considered to be a role model by America's founding fathers, who had at one time considered Hebrew as its official language. That's true. Yeah. You know what that would have meant? It would have made it so much easier for Americans to come on Aliyah. Settlements should not be described in a pejorative manner. All of Israel, including the settlements, should be described as, in Friedman's words, one of the most amazing political experiments in modern history. I didn't read that, but he talks about the state of Israel, and here, well, he says the Emes, that it's one of the most amazing political experiments. I don't know why it's an experiment. One of the most amazing political phenomena, fact, reality in modern history. Their existence has and will continue to make Israel more secure despite their detractors. I think that Ira makes sure that his letters get in on a Monday or a Tuesday morning. Shkoyach. You're doing good. Okay. All right. Number one. Of all the interesting things, number one is from the Shmoneh Esrei of Musaf on Yom Kippur. Shmoneh Esrei of Musaf on Yom Kippur. Somehow or other, it's going to have something to do with Mikates Chanukah. I'll work that out by the time the shiur is over. Ela Eskro, most famous of the piyutim that are said on Yom Kippur, it's the story of the 10 martyrs. There it says, okay, Ela Eskro. It's in that section of the Musaf Shmoneh Esrei that's called the Avoda, the service. It talks about korbanos that once were brought, and now we don't have it. And there's a sense of mourning at what we once had that was lost. And into that mourning, we have the story of the 10 martyrs who were put to death by the Romans. A similar story appears in the Kinnot of Yom Kippur, both are the two times of the year. The Kinnot on Yom Kippur, Tishabah. Good. The cup is in so many different places right now. It's all Iris for. Okay. The Kinnot of Tishabah also have a Kinnot for the 10 months. Ela Ezgira. These I remember. The Nafshi Olai Eshbacha, and I pour out my soul. Kibla'unu Zorim Ke'uga B'li Hafucha. For wanton people, strangers, foreigners, have swallowed me up as if I were an unturned piece of cake, like something that's on the fire and they just have consumed us completely. For in that ruler's time there was no reprieve. La'asara haruge melucha, for the 10 who were killed by the government. Belondo sefer mipim shule arema, the haven v'dikdeg v'dot v'shumach very important what he says here. As the ruler studied the book taught by the Sanhedrin, and Gerardus Stichel Talmud Chochem, Caesar, or whoever it was, the Roman governor, looked into the books of Torah, and he studied, and Upasar Beveil HaMishpatim, and he opened the study of Parshat Mishpatim, the Choshev Mesimas, he thought of a plot. When he came to the pasuk of a gonev ish umecharo, the nimtza biyado mot yumak. The halacha is, you kidnap somebody and you sell him, death penalty. That's the halacha in Torah for kidnapping. Gav alev begedolim, he became arrogant against the great of Israel. The tzivul amalot pelotero na'olim, and he commanded that a room in his palace should be filled with shoes. With shoes. The korol asorah chachomim gedolim, and he called 10 of the great wise men of Israel. Mevinei dat uta'amela b'filpulim, those who plumb the law and its principles through analytic discussion. And he asked them a shayla. Roman Caesar asks the wise men of Israel, Gedolim, so he asks them a shayla. Dinu mishpat zeh la'ashuro, I want you to paskin this halacha properly. Ve'al ta'avtuhu b'chaz of li'amro. Don't confuse it or destroy it. Truthfully and clearly, and don't in any way make any mistakes of it. I want to know the halacha. Tell me the following. Ki im hotziuhu lamito l'ro. I want you to tell me the halacha, truth, with light, with understanding. I want the truth. Ki matzei ish gonev nefesh me'achav b'nei Yisrael. This is a direct quote from the Torah. If we find a person who has kidnapped a soul from his brothers, from amongst the children of Israel, with Amerbo Ubecharo, and he betrayed him and he sold him off to somebody else, what's that halacha? What are you supposed to do to somebody who's a kidnapper? Haim Kamlo, they answered him, what that halacha really is? Umeis Hakonah Haho. Death penalty for the person who stole. Nam. So he said, Ayei avotechem asher achihem micharu. What about your fathers who sold their brother Yosef off into slavery? All right, we're now by the right parasha in Torah. Your brothers, your ancestors sold their brother off into slavery. They sold him off to a caravan of Ishmaelites. The Gemara says that they sold him for what they got for it was worth a pair of shoes. That's why he brought them into a room that he had filled with shoes. They should see shoes all over the room, as a reminder of the terrible sin of the sale of Yosef by his brothers. V'atem, says Caesar to them, Atem kablu din shamayim alechem, accept upon yourself the justice, the law of heaven. Ki mi yimei avotechem lo nimtzakechem, because from the days of your fathers there have not been found people as great as you. V'im hayu b'chayim, and if the Shvatim, Ruven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, if they would be alive, hayiti donon lefnechem, I would judge them. V'atem tisu avon avotechem, you carry the sin of your fathers. You're going to die for the sin of your fathers. You know, I've spoken, I speak to people from time to time, and I had the sort of wedding Sunday night, and I spoke to a number of people, and most people walk around with the impression that's it. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Chutzpah Satargu, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, all of these great people were put to death because of the brothers sold Yosef into slavery. I said, wait a minute, that can't be. That can't be. It says in Torah, Lo Yusu Ovos Albonim Abonim Lo Yusu Avosim. Fathers don't die for the sins of children. Children don't die for the sins of their fathers. Ish Becheto Yumas. I'm only guilty for what I did. I'm not guilty for anything. No, they said, no, God, they told me, no, I don't know what I'm talking about. Not the first time I've been told that, but then they were nicer. But it's clear that they believe with perfect faith that the Asura Haruge Malchus, the 10 great martyrs, were put to death by Rome, and that was expiation and forgiveness for the sin of Achilas Yosef. So, of course, point number one of this year is going to be that is absolute nonsense of the highest order. But then we'll have to explain what's going on over here. What it reminds me of is this goes back to my days in West Hempstead. A number of the people in the community wanted me to invite Rabbi X to give a lecture in shul. And I didn't like Rabbi X's opinions and thoughts, so I resisted, you know. Anyway, it seems that he had given a lecture in a neighboring community, and they came to me, boy, was that a lecture. Oh, you got in, Rabbi, you got in right here. So I asked him, does anybody have a recording of the lecture? Yeah, they brought me a recording of the lecture. And I started listening to the lecture. Now the Torah that he was at the time, he was talking about was the Holocaust. And he said that the Holocaust changed everything. And specifically, what he said in that lecture was, after the Holocaust, I cannot agree with Rabbi Moshe. Rabbi Moshe is Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Paskin, in a landmark Psak Halacha, he Paskin, that Kiddushin, marriage, that is performed by Reformed rabbis is not valid in Jewish law. That was a landmark psak that was of such tremendous benefit. What was the benefit? If Reformed Kiddushin would be Kiddushin, since they didn't require, if a family breaks up, they didn't require a get. Which means that any woman who remarries afterwards, all children that will be born will be manzehim of the worst order. That Moshe, by saying that the Kiddushin, the marriage originally, was not valid, saved America from millions of Mavzeva. But our rabbi in the Shia is saying that since the Holocaust, I cannot agree with Rabbi Moshe. Why? Because Hitler didn't differentiate between one Jew and the other. All Jews were the same by him. Now here's this liberal, open-hearted American rabbi, we're all one for all and all for one. So there happened to be somebody who was listening over my shoulder. My wife was listening to me, listening to the tape as well. And she came out with a statement that floored me. She became the subject of my drasha that week. So after the Holocaust, Hitler, Yemach Shemai, he's the Pesach. He's going to decide. Because he wanted to destroy all Jews, therefore, Kiddushin of Reform Rabbi is good, everything is good. He's not the Pesach. Guaranteed. Caesar is not the Pasek. He is not the one who's going to decide whose death is going to be a source of forgiveness and expiation for the sale of Yosef by his brothers. So we're going to have to get to a point where we do understand what's Ela Eskador talking about. What does it really mean? So I'll tell you. We're going to get to it. The story of the 10 martyrs appears in so many different midrashim. The texts differ from one another. The basic facts of the story remain the same. The shoes, Roman governor or Caesar, the 10, all the same. And I found a text of the Medrash that I personally consider to be obviously the one that best explains what's happening here. Watch. We have it in number 2. Va'oto Kesar Harosha. That Caesar, the Rosha, Hayyodea, he knew Shemachru, that they sold Yosef Benahalayim for shoes. Vomalahem. And he told the 10, Kavu Alechem Din Shamayim, accept upon yourself the law of heaven. He's speaking in the name of the law of heaven. Amru lo. Now listen to this sentence. It's such a simple question, and I had never found it in the Medrash till last week. I went home and all over. And this is the question that I've been asking about the story all along. These 10 giants said to him, Imachei Yosef Mokru Achiem Onuma Pashanu. If the brothers of Yosef sold Yosef, what did we do wrong? We didn't do anything. V'lomah taharom otanu, why did you kill us? We're talking about Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Gamliel, Gedolei Olam, who are saying, we're innocent. The moment you see a line like this, it means the whole thing is really nonsense. You know what it is? It's just another way at sort of turning the murder of Jews into something extremely justified. That's all it is. No more than that, but chas v'shalom to believe that yes, the Asura Harugei Malchus died because of the sin of the brothers of Yosef. To believe that is killing them a second time. And if the first time they were killed by Rome, the second time we kill them. If we say, yeah, there's no such thing, Bechlan Yisrael. No such thing. Imachei Yosef, if the brothers of Yosef sold their father, their brother, what did we do? On the other hand, so the Caesar tells them, Imhoi Achei Yosef Hayom Bachayim, if the brothers of Yosef would be alive today, Hayithi Tosam Vaosevahem did, I would grab them. And I heard the man is standing up for justice. Justice. A terrible crime was committed, that's it. He is going to commit a horrible crime. And who knows how many hundreds of thousands of Jews were killed by Rome, but no. He's the one who utters Din Shamayim. Since the Holocaust, you understand, Hitler wird der Psak, Pesach Kachna. Caesar, the Caesar is no Pesach at all. He's just plain a garden variety, dirty anti-Semite who has a great deal of power. Achshav Shein on the Chaim, now that the brothers who sold Yosef are not alive. Esebachemdin. I'm going to pass judgment against you. Shatem Shkulim Kache Yosef B'mechidato. You are equal to the brothers of Yosef. So then they told him, nothing we have to point out of this, so they told him the proverbial, give us 3 days. Ten lamas man shloshi yomim, ad she neitan gzeira zu bo min ha-shemayim, Nikabel aleinu din shomayim. If this is what was decided in heaven, we're going to accept upon ourselves whatever was decreed in heaven. Not your decree, but heaven's decree. Nosom lehem's man shlov shigayim, he gave them 3 days. V'nitkapzu halolu harugei malchus ve'ilim, and they gathered together, the 10 of them gathered together. And these are them. Rabbi Shimon Amliel, Rabbi Yishuel ben Elisha, who's Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda ben Vava, Rabbi Hanina ben Shadion, Rabbi Yesheva Asofa, Rabbi Elazar ben Dama, Rabbi Hanina ben Chachinoi, Rabbi Chutzpah Sanaturgaman, Rabbi Elazar ben Shavua. Elohim Asora Haruge Malchus Shenergo. And here I think it's sort of an ironic way of putting it, Shenergo al Shemachrubas Yosef. Like, you can't even, it's a bitter kind of ghoulish humor. They didn't sell Yosef, and they weren't killed for Yosef. By the way, you have to understand that Medrashim cannot usually be taken literally. You have to look for the kernel of truth. Chazal communicated all sorts of important messages, and those messages were couched in stories and incidents, but you have to use your head. You can't learn it literally. Okay? And the proof is right over here. They all gathered together. They couldn't have been gathered together. The Asara Haruge Malchus took place over a period of 70, 80 years. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha Kohen Gadol was at the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva is 65 years after the Churban HaBayit, the rebellion, the Bar Kokhba rebellion over Rome. There was no such thing as 10 people who were put to death at one time. It took place over a period of maybe 70, 80 years. So already you see that Medrash is not telling us history, because this is clearly not history. All right. Okay. Now we're going to see what is the pshat in the Medrash. So let's turn over the page. And what we're going to go to is number 3. Number 3 is on the right-hand side of the page. You can't see the number 3 because the staples are on number 3. Where the staple is? It'll be easier to read it. Okay. Beautiful Gemara in Sanhedrin. Beautiful Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin describes different groups of people who came with complaints to the Jewish people, to Alexander the Great. And one of the stories is the following. And this story is going to be the key that will explain to us the story of the 10 martyrs. Shuv panachas, at another time, bo b'nei Mitzrayim l'adunim Yisrael, l'fnei Alexandros Mokdon, the Egyptians came to contend with the Jews before Alexander the Macedonian. Amr lo, the Egyptian said to Alexander the Great, Arehu Omer in Torah it says, Vashem Natanat Kem Ha'am Be'enim Yitzchayim Vayashilom, God gave the favor of the Jewish people in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they, before they left Egypt, they gave them gold and silver and garments. Hey. Behold, it says in Torah of the Jews, Hashem gave the Jewish people's favor in the eyes of the Egyptians, and they lent them, not really a correct translation. Not only it's not really a correct translation, it's a just plain wrong translation. How do you like that? I'm very aggressive today. Vayashilu means they asked, but I'll talk about that later. That's not the main point here. Gold and silver and other valuables which the Jews never returned. Thus we claim from the Jews, so they tell Alexander All that wealth of Egypt the Jews went out with, we want it back. Give us back the gold and silver that you took from us. I mean, that's obviously why they translated it as Lent. That's the way the Egyptians wanted to look at it now, 1,000 years later. So here it is. This is most probably the biggest class action in all history. The Egyptian people want from all the Jews that they chip in.
This happened already in the recent past, about 20 years ago.
What happened in the recent past?
The same thing. The Egyptians asked for the money back.
The Egyptians asked for their money back?
Yeah.
Which money did they want back?
What we took from them when we left
Egypt. Yeah, there was such a thing that happened. Okay. How did I miss that? I didn't get the New York Times, the Jerusalem Post that day. All right. Anyway, so here it is. They want all the money back. I mean, this is going to affect every single solitary Jew in the whole world. Amar Gevir ben Pesisa, Lachachamim.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I can't use it all. Thank you very much. Gevir ben Pesisa, the Gemara had introduced him earlier. Gevir ben Pesisa was a hunchback. And he, aside from this Gemara, we never hear about him. He's not the Gevir ben Pesisa. He's not Macham HaGoyim Posek Hador Gevir Pesisa. He's a Pashat Egeet. So Gevir ben Pesisa said to the Chachamim, he said to them, Tumuli Rushut, give me permission. Let me go, and I will represent the Jewish people before Alexander the Great. And therefore, in Yinatzchuni, if they will defeat me in the debate, Imrulahem had Yotshev Amr Yitzchakim. So then you can say at least, because you won over Gevir ben Pesisa, that means something. What's Gevir ben Pesisa? He's nothing, he's not even a lawyer. He's not even a shyster lawyer. What is it? But Imania Anatseach Lakam, if I'm going to be victorious over them, Imrulahem, tell them, Torah Moshe Rabbeinu Nitchat Hem. It was the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu that was victorious over you. Not Nolorashus, Vaholach, we don't in mind. The rabbis gave permission to Gevir ben Pesisa to go represent the Jewish people. Pretty strange thing. I mean, there's so much writing on this case. They should have sent Nat Lewin, Dershowitz, you know, send Nitzana Leitner. Send a bunch of heavyweight lawyers to... No. A relative unknown, Gevir ben Pesisa. We don't even know his Tadatzayut number. We know nothing about him. Gevir ben Pesisa goes, and he comes before Alexander the Great. Comes before the Alexander the Great. Amalahan, so he says to them, his opening question is, Amalahan, Mehefamata Nevi'im Chai, where do you bring proof that we took gold and silver from you? How do you know that to be true? So he said, Amalahan, they said to him, in our Torah, from your Torah, that's what we know. Amalahan, so Gevir ben Pesisa said, you know, I'll tell you something. My counter argument is also going to be only from Torah. So he said to them, Shenema, there's a passage in Torah that says, Moshe ben Esau, Asher Yoshev Mitzrayim, 30 Shana, Avraham Yehud Shana. The passage says the Jews were in Egypt for 430 years. 430 years. So you know what I want? You owe us the wages for 600,000 for 430 years. Even without compounded interest, it will break the bank of any country in the world. You owe us. We work for you. You enslaved us in Egypt for 430 years. Pay up. This sum surely far exceeds anything we might owe you. Amalahem Alexander Smukhtin, Hakasidul Ochuva, Alexander the Great said, give him an answer, respond to him. Amalo, so they said, here it goes again, give us 3 days. Give us 3 days. The proverbial 3 days. Nasalan's man, he gave them time, during which Batku, they searched the Lomotsu Chuva, they didn't find an answer. Miyad, immediately, he nirku sidotein kishen zeruot, they abandoned their fields, sown as they were, karmein kishen yutuot, and their vineyards planted as they were, uborchu, when they fled. The otashama shviyat haita, that year was a shvita year. So here it is, Klal Yisroel has all of this, everything that's growing in the fields and the vineyards. Cute Gemara. The Gemara never writes anything that's cute. It's a nice story, you know, but Torah is not talks and tales. There's something that's being said over here. We have to find out is what indeed is being said by this Gemara. What was taking place before the descendants? 50 years ago, maybe more. I heard from my oldest brother over somewhere, Rav Yosef Yoel Gold, rabbi in Worcester, Massachusetts, 36 years. He was a brilliant man, very brilliant man. He took most of the brains in the family. He left a great deal for my second brother, but I was left with those two guys, you know. It was all downhill. Anyway, so he said the following. Chazal very often expressed all sorts of ideas by using a story. You have to get to the heart of the story. What are they talking about over here? You know what they're talking about over here? They're talking about the great battle of the period of Bayit Sheni. There were two great battles. One was the one against Greece, the time of the Hashanayim. That was in the middle of the period of the Second Temple, and the second great battle came toward the end of the period of the Second Temple. And both of them were internal struggles within the Jewish people. The struggle at the time of Hanukkah, and that we'll get to talk about, and we'll get to today, there was, for the first time in history, there was a group called Mit Yavnim. The Mit Yavnim were Jews, fellow Jews, who sided with Greece against their own people. It's unbelievable. It had never happened before. Never happened before. There may have been during the time, even in Egypt, there may have been one, two, three Jews who sided with Egypt against their people, Dasan Aviram. In the time of Persia, we don't know of anybody. But here it was, Yavan, the struggle against Greece. There were Jews who sided with Greece. It was, talk about that again. The second great battle was the battle against the early Christians at the end of the second period of the Second Temple. And one of the great battles that Klal Yisroel fought was against the Christians. And we'll see that the extent of that battle we can see soon. But what's happening over here is the following. It's very simple. The Christians believed that man is born with sin. Man's soul is black with sin. And there's only one way to be able to purify oneself. By believing in him, bringing him into your heart, that's it. You are forgiven everything. Klal Yisroel said, no, there's no such thing. Every child that's born is clean, pure, no sin. The only sin is the one that one might do themselves. We're only guilty for what we did. We're not guilty for anything that happened before. There's no such thing as original sin in the Garden of Eden and everybody sinful. The machlokes between Christianity and Judaism was that Christianity held that the sin carries over biologically. It goes into genes. Now the only way, believe in him and thou shalt be saved. Judaism said, no, this brace start up. I'm not guilty of anything. What I do, I'm guilty of. This was one of the essential battles between Christianity and Judaism. And they posed a serious threat. They were the second threat that grew from within the Jewish people. These are not foreigners. They're foreigners from within. And this was a battle that had to be fought. What's the machlokes over here? What the Gemara calls the Egyptians who come to claim, you owe us the money that your ancestors took 1,000 years ago when they left Egypt. This is a Christian position. The guilt of what Jews did in Egypt goes over to you. You have to pay us. So Gideon of Jesus briefly says, according to you, that guilt goes over biologically, so you're guilty for having enslaved us all of these years. Pay up. That's what's going on over there. I believe that the same thing is true with the Asura and Rudy Malthus. Caesar comes and says, you are guilty of the sale of Yosef. And you're going to pay for the sale of Yosef. They look, Chachmei Yisrael look at him and they say, Imachei Yosef, if the brothers of Yosef sold Yosef into slavery, what are we guilty of? What did we do? We're not guilty. We never did anything. We never saw Yosef. We never did anything. There's no such thing as guilt being carried over. In the translation over here, I pointed out that it says the Egyptians lent. Jews asked, and the Egyptians lent it to them. Now that's a mistake that's made by a lot of people. We didn't borrow anything. No Jew asked for his neighbor, give me gold, silver, clothing, shmatas, whatever it is, and we can come bring it back. And that was not with it. The word sha'al has two meanings in Hebrew. It means to borrow, but it also, and in most places in Tanakh, means to ask. They ask. Now over here we once explained. It's very fascinating. The pasuk says that God tells Moshe, please ask the Jewish people to ask for money before they leave, for riches, for wealth, for objects of value. Yeah. And Moshe tells them, listen, v'akashar intem, please ask before you go. And Rashi brings it there. It's all in Parshas Bo. Three times it's mentioned in Parshas Bo. Rashi brings the Gemara that said that the Rashi told Moshe, listen, I got a problem, Moshe. I got a problem. My problem is when I told Avraham Avinu by the Brisbane of Sodom that your children are going to be enslaved for 400 years, and afterwards they're going to go out b'rechush gadol, with great wealth. I don't want to be like a liar. They have to go out with great wealth. So please ask them to ask. So I asked, if God wants to make sure that they will ask for it, why doesn't he make it a mitzvah? Da bear of the Israel, speak unto the children of Israel, Safei otam, command them. This is your mitzvah. After you make the Korban Pesach, you had the Arba Kaisis, you got the courage up, I demand of you that you ask, that's it, mitzvah, mitzvah. Why doesn't he do that? What's he so worried about? The Rosh Hashanah says, please, ask them, do me a favor, convince them that they should ask the neighbors to give them. So we must explain. If they're going to go out with a push gadol, that means they have to be repaid and replenished for whatever it is that Klal Yisrael lost in its time. One of the things that affected them most of all was the fact that they were subservient. They were subservient to an ugly people for all of those years. The Rebbeinu wants, something from Klal Yisrael that will never be accomplished by a command. It can only be accomplished if you get Jews to ask. What does he want? That night of Pesach is going to be their last time with their Egyptian taskmasters. God does not want them to go out of Egypt until they have the courage to say, Mitzri, I worked for you. Pay me! Because the moment they do that, it's going to make an awesome change in their entire psychological makeup. They're going to walk out not having been slaves. By asking to be paid, they're going to turn themselves into employees. It's a whole different psychological ballgame. They cannot leave Mitzrayim as a beaten people. And you know what? You know how many times in history, in their own lives, they're going to turn around and say, how did I let that ever happen to me? How did I let them enslave me? How did I let them beat me? Why didn't I stand up? Why didn't I act? What were we waiting for? What happened to the freedom of the Jewish spirit? They're not going to have to look back, because as they're on their way out of Mitzrayim, they are asking, they're not borrowing. They're going to their neighbor and say, I worked for you, pay up. Now, this is it. And therefore, Klal Yisrael go out with two things. A mind that has been cleansed of slavery, and yes, the money that they were supposed to get for having worked, that made all the difference. But those who want to find fault with us, as the Egyptians here, they translated Vayashilim, they translated it lent. And therefore, if you lent, you have to pay us back. Oh, no, 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 but that's not the pshat. We didn't lend then. You know, we didn't borrow then. You know what we did then? We demanded what's coming to us, what we deserve. So anyway, here we have now two Gemaras. The Gemara of the great case that comes before Alexander the Great, and the story of that Zorah and Gemalchus, I believe they're both the same thing. It's the great struggle between Judaism and Christianity. Christianity that believes man is born in sin, and sin goes over biologically. I remember, this was a few years ago. Somebody was asked in an interview, you want to hear the horror of it all? Somebody asked the priest in an interview, or representative of the church, if Hitler, Yimach Shemayim, would in the last moments of his life, the last seconds, have accepted Jesus, what would happen to him? Straight to paradise. And his 6 million victims who died without accepting, we're going to hell. You understand the absurdity?
Yeah.
Hitler will go to heaven, and 6 million Jews that he slaughtered will go. Why? Because he took Achenvei. He took Yeshu into his arm. That's the absurdity of it all. doesn't get more absurd than that. So now, watch. I think this year is going to go into extra innings, you understand? It's a two-part year. Number five. We'll get to four. Let's see. Number five. This is the Rambam in the second chapter of the laws of Tefillah. First halacha. Be made Rabbi Gamliel in the days of Rabbi Gamliel, Rabu Haminim Yisrael. Non-believers. What other word can we use for medium? Not precursor, you know, all better not. Not good people. People who rejected Yahrut. There were a growing number of them. But he's clearly, we'll see, he's clearly talking about one group, the Christians, that's for sure. They oppressed, or they, by oppression, we're not talking about, you know, physical oppression, but it was, they caused great tsar to Klal Yisrael. Umesitum otam lashuv me'acharei Hashem. And they tried to seduce and influence Jews to turn away from God. The Kivan Shehra, Rabbi Gamliel saw, Shezo Gedolo Mikol Tzorche B'nei Adam. This is an unbelievable statement that the Rambam is making. When he saw that this Tzorah is worse than, it is Gedolo Mikol Tzorche B'nei Adam. This has to be dealt with more than man's other needs. The most important thing is to deal with this. I didn't really understand it that well. So when I have a problem with the Rambam, I go to a sefer called Yad Pshuta. Yad Pshuta is about 14 volumes on the Rambam. They're written by Rav Nachman Eliezer Rabinovich and Sohav Mershiva of Yeshivat Be'er Kach Moshe in Malei Adumim, one of the great Talmid Chachamim of our time. Big. He says that the pshat is, why was this the greatest tzara? Because the minyan became a wall separating Jews and God in heaven. They were trying to build an iron curtain that would separate Jews from God. There can be no sorrow greater than that. What are his words? Shesu gedola mikol tzorkei b'nei Adam. This is Perush. Hakirvah l'makom baruch hu, being close to God, blessed be He. Nekutza yotem mikol shara tzorkim. The ability to know and feel the closest to God is the most important thing that man requires, that the Jew requires. And they were there to separate, pull apart.
Who is they?
Christians.
Oh,
okay. By the way, that's exactly what they've been trying to do for 2,000 years. And they're swarming around this country trying to do the same thing. And not everybody gets it. Okay, so what did he do? Amad Hu Beis Dina, how did he deal with this threat? Rabbi Gamliel and his Bet Din, V'hitkin V'rocha Achas, Shetia Bosh She'elam L'Sne Hashem, La'Beit Hamin. They added a 19th V'rocha to Shmona Esrei, the V'rocha of Olam Al Shinin Al Tehi Tigla. That's quite, I mean, when one looks at that V'rocha, that's, there's no other bracha in Shmona Esrei that comes anywhere close to that. That they should be destroyed, obliterated, such, oh, strong, strong terms. It says that we ask before God to destroy these non-believers. The Kabbal Tapetfil, took this bracha and he put it into Shmona Esrei. Kedei Shetahia, Aruchavati Karkol, so that everybody should be able to say it and say it well. Nimtzu kol ha-brachos shebetfilah. So therefore, it means that all the brachos of Shemoneh Esrei are not Shemoneh Esrei, but they are 19. I was always wondering, so why didn't we call it, like Gan Tam Shemoneh Esrei? That sounds strange. No, you know, you do it for a week or two, and everybody will be saying, I wait till I dump in Shemoneh Esrei. I'm going to dump in Shemoneh Esrei right away. But you know why they never changed it to Shemoneh Esrei? Because they were not happy and not proud about that bracha that they had to put into the Shemoneh Esrei. They wanted it to be there, but they wanted it to be concealed. It was something that that was not pleasant and was done only because it had to be done. Rabbi Gamliel saw what the problem was. And we've seen what the problem was in the Medrash of Asorah Gemalkos. We see it in the story of Alexander the Great and Gevir ben Persisa. There are many other Gemaras that seem to be innocent, nice, cute. There's no such thing in Shas as innocent, nice, and cute. Everything is meaningful. Everything has power to it. And unfortunately, so much of it is true on Hayom Hazeh until today. So we'll do... Number 4, I'll tell you 4, but maybe we'll have to go over it again next week. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara says that when they created the Shemoneh Esrei. So here, let's read it. Tana Rabbanan, wherever it's taught in a brayta, Shimon HaPikuli, Hizdir Shemoneh Esrei Brachos Lifnei Rabbi Gamliel or Aseidah V'Yavna. It's Rabbi Gamliel who was in Yavna. Yavna is remembered after the destruction of the Second Temple. By then already Christian groups were on the rise, and it was then that they composed the Shemoneh Esrei. Now, really, Shemoneh Esrei goes back to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, but he reorganized and ordered it, and it says, Amar lehem Rav Gamliel HaChachamim, Rav Gamliel said to the HaChachamim, Klum yesh odom sheyodea letakein v'yirkat ha-tzedukim. Is there anyone here who knows how to establish a blessing against the heretics? Omar Shmuel HaKotan. Shmuel HaKotan. They don't translate HaKotan. Of course, the translation of Shmuel HaKotan is Shmuel the Smaller. Why was he called Shmuel HaKotan? Because there was a great Shmuel who was the Navi. And Shmuel HaKotan was a great Tzaddik. So he's Shmuel the Navi, and right next to him, right below him is Shmuel HaKotan. Omar Shmuel HaKotan B'tikna, Shmuel HaKotan rose, and he wrote, and he composed, and he authored the Bracha of Olam Hashinim. L'shona Acheres Shekocha, the following year, Shmuel HaKotan was davening before the Olam, and he forgot the Bracha. Rabbi Yonatan, he forgot the Bracha. I have a feeling he forgot the bracha because it was a nethmet to him writing it. And he wrote it only because he knew that it was necessary. Klal Yisrael was suffering terrible from the early Christians, as we have suffered throughout. V'hishki Boshtayim, Sholeh shows, he contemplated it for 2 or 3 hours, trying to recall its wording, V'lo ha'elu, and during that time they did not remove him as prayer leader. They didn't remove Lo Ha'elu, because the Gemara says, like we use the term, a person who davenes for the Omer, Yored Lifnei HaTeva, goes down before the Omer, because they used to have the Omer where the Shliach Tzibur davened from was a bit lower, to fulfill the pasuk Mima'amakin Kerativcha Hashem, from the depths. And here the halach is that somebody who gets stuck in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei, traveling for the Omer, you remove him. But they didn't remove him. didn't remove him. So the Gemara says, so the Gemara asks, Amai Lohelu, why didn't they remove him? Bohama Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Rav, a person who makes a mistake in any of the 18 brachas, you don't remove him from the army. But if somebody makes a mistake in Velam Al Shinim, you remove him, because we're concerned that the reason why he doesn't want to say Velam Al Shinim, because he may very well be one of those Velam Al Shinim, Mal Shinim himself. By the way, the original text was Velam Notzvim. And because of for a very good reason, at one point it was changed to Vola Malshinim. A Malshin, of course, is what we've suffered from also throughout history. People who just say all sorts of things that cause terrible suffering to the Jewish people. All right, let's give this a finish. I gotta go. But if he... if he erred in the blessing of the heretics, we remove him. Because we're concerned, we suspect maybe he is a heretic. So why didn't they remove him? So the Gemara says, Shami, Shmuel HaKotv is different. The Ehu Tikra, he was the one who in fact composed it. So they didn't have any doubt about Shmuel HaKotv being a heretic. To be continued in Mezzo.
Hanukkah fair will be in this room as soon as we set up. As soon as you are out and we're setting up, and then you're coming back.
What?
Hanukkah fair, book sales, and other items.